It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
Today I spoke to Green Party co-leader James Shaw about an Oxfam petition that Green has supported for equitable vaccine distribution, government support for community housing providers, and the rough treatment that Green MP Ricardo Menendez March has faced in Parliament. But first, I asked about a recent statement they had made on tax inequality.
I first wanted to begin by talking about this data that was released last week that shows that a shocking number of wealthy New Zealanders are paying less tax than the average person. What is Green's response to that data? Is it surprising to you?
Look, I'm not wholly surprised at all, I have to say. I think it's really unfortunate, but we've been saying for some time that there is a real problem in the tax system where people who own assets and wealth but don't take their compensation in the form of wages don't pay tax at the same rate that salary earners and wage earners do. The data, and it is experimental, and it is early data, but it does seem to confirm that.
Yeah, so in your statement on that, you said that this data shows a need for progressive tax reform. What does that reform look like in your eyes?
Well, back last year during the election campaign, you may remember that we campaigned for a wealth tax that was designed exactly to deal with this problem, which is in New Zealand we have a tax system that is heavily skewed towards taxing people who work but not people who own. And so we feel that that needs rebalancing.
When people hear about a wealth tax, there's often this knee-jerk reaction, even when they're not the ones who would be impacted by it. Do you know why this is? What would you say to people who are apprehensive of that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the wealth tax that we took into the election campaign is that it would have been paid by about a grand total of 6% of New Zealanders. I think the issue is that people sort of think that they are going to fit into that category of very wealthy people one day don't want to be taxed. I think that's the issue, is the vast majority of people actually have, especially in today's housing market, absolutely no chance of accumulating the kind of wealth that would end up with them actually getting caught in the bracket where they would be paying that tax.
Yeah, so it seems to me like the Green Party is very confident that their tax plan is the best way to go. So I'd like to hear you reiterate on this point. Why is this plan the best option?
Well, look, I mean, there are a number of options. We campaigned for many, many years for a capital gains tax. And of course, Jacinda Ardern ruled that out in the last term of Parliament. A wealth tax basically is what we would describe as the next best way of trying to bring some fairness back into the tax system and ensuring that the people who are wealthiest, the best, best off, just pay their fair share of tax like everybody else in the country is doing.
So for this next topic, I'd like to chat about this petition from Oxfam that has called for equitable distribution of the vaccine. Could you outline what this petition is all about and why the Green Party is in support of it?
Yeah, look, the basic problem here is that countries like New Zealand, which are wealthier and have access to the vaccine, are starting to roll the vaccine out amongst their populations. But developing countries in the global south are generally not able to access the vaccines in the same way that wealthier developed countries are. And so the Oxfam petition is calling on countries like New Zealand to get together and to ensure that everyone around the world is able to get access to the vaccine, not just those of us who are privileged to live in the countries that we live in. And ultimately, that is actually in all of our own self-interest, because none of us is safe until all of us are safe.
Yeah, so when we talk about equitable distribution, what does that look like? Does equitable distribution still allow for the prioritising of certain groups over others, such as those who are at a higher risk?
Yeah, it does. It just means that countries that otherwise wouldn't be able to get access because they're not as well resourced actually have access to the vaccine. You know, the kind of, there is real inequity here. So polio, there was a vaccine for polio that was developed in the first part of the 20th century. But there are still spots around the world in very poor countries where polio still exists, and it's just because those countries haven't been able to get access to the vaccine that they need and to be able to develop systems to roll it out amongst their populations. And so we don't want to see a repeat of that kind of health inequality when it comes to COVID-19.
How would you like to see this petition transform into real-world change? I understand that there's some concern with keeping the vaccine affordable for developing countries.
Yeah, I mean, that basically comes down to the nature of the problem, which is affordability. And there is a piece around intellectual property which needs to get taken care of as well. But the petition really calls on New Zealand to join with other similar countries to make sure that our vaccine program is not purely focused on our domestic population, but also that we work with other countries to make sure that the rollout is indeed truly global.
Thirdly, let's talk about community housing providers, and you're going to have to forgive my ignorance on this topic, but could you explain to me what a community housing provider is and what it does?
Community housing providers are generally charities and trusts that have taken it upon themselves to try and help to solve the housing crisis. The most significant one, you know, most people in New Zealand would have heard of Habitat for Humanity, which is a global organisation, the purpose of which is to ensure that everybody has a home to live in. And so in New Zealand, they've been working for probably just over a decade, maybe almost 20 years now, on, you know, kind of rolling out houses around the country. So it's a little bit like state housing, except it's not provided by the government, it's provided by charitable organisations.
The government has announced that they will be supporting Pacifica peoples in becoming community housing providers. What are the implications of that?
Yeah, so the, you know, people in their own communities know what's best for their own communities. And so what we're doing here is we're saying, look, there are charitable organisations amongst Pacifica communities here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, that are very well connected to, you know, at-risk families, people who are in either in overcrowding situations or who are looking for housing. They're very well connected to other Pacific community-oriented charities and to the churches in those communities. And so they're quite well placed to be able to establish themselves as community housing providers. And so the idea here is that the government wants to support that sector to expand.
So your release also notes that community housing providers play an important role in solving the housing crisis. How so? Could you elaborate on that for me?
Well, they supplement the work that the state is doing, and they are often kind of the where innovation happens, if you like. So there are numerous organisations of a range of sizes. Some of them are, you know, very small and might only have a dozen properties or even fewer than that. Others are larger and may have several hundred. And, you know, obviously New Zealand is in the grips of a housing crisis. We're building far too few houses to keep up with demand. House price inflation is absolutely rampant, and that's having a massive impact on, you know, virtually everybody actually in one way or another. And so what we're saying is that we believe that community housing providers and that whole sector can help to add to the efforts that the government is making. And it is going to take all of us, and it's going to take everything we've got to solve the housing crisis. And so we really applaud the move to include the Pacifica communities in that effort.
So lastly, I do just want to briefly touch on the story that's been in the media lately, which is the scrutiny that your MP, Ricardo Menendez-March, has received from opposition. This isn't the first time that he's been nitpicked by the opposition like this, so I wanted to ask for a statement on that. Why does he keep being targeted like that?
Well, in this particular instance, you know, I have to say I thought that some of the undercurrent behind the you know, people having a go at Ricardo sort of smacked of xenophobia and homophobia, but it really was quite xenophobic, sort of, you know, basically picking him out because he happens to have been born in Mexico rather than being born in Aotearoa, New Zealand. And so the fact is, you know, his family has had some real extreme illness in it, both of his parents. He made a call, and lots of New Zealanders are making similar calls at the moment. Some people know that they're unable to go and see their parents in a state like that. Others are saying, "Look, I'm gonna give it a crack, even with the circumstances that we find ourselves in." And you know, I guess a lot of people just don't like immigrants, and so they sort of saw that as an excuse to pile on.
Yeah, so it is honestly a bit distressing to see this sort of thing happen in politics. Do you think that sort of behaviour has an adverse impact on Parliament's reputation as a whole?
Yeah, of course it does. I mean, and I have to say, I don't think it's very pleasant either, and there's rather a lot of it. Gowrie Gardiman had exactly the same thing, especially in the kind of early years when she first became a Member of Parliament. You know, I was really proud to have New Zealand's first MP, who was a former refugee to Aotearoa, New Zealand, who's gone on to become an international human rights lawyer, worked for the UN, and she has had to put up with just the most extraordinary levels of, racism and sexism coming into that role. And I think the problem is people do see that, and they say, well, I don't really want any part of that. And so even people who might support people like Gowrie or Ricardo would find themselves turned off politics and not participating, and that's not good for any of us.
That was Green Party co-leader James Shaw. Thanks for joining me, James. We'll be right back after this.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party. The Wire.